Okay, Cafe Machina episode, I think this is episode number 12. We're here live at Sebring International Raceway, and we're greeted by an awesome guest that I was fortunate enough to meet yesterday. I've read his book before. It's called Performance Prime. Mr. Jacques Dallaire, we have on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, well, I'm excited. I've heard from numerous people in the racing industry about you, and that's where I was recommended the book. It's like, hey, you're in the mind a lot. You should read this 100%. And as I was going through it, I mean, I literally did the whole ACT model. I wrote it down. I have my, what do you call it, like an acronym?
Attributes. Yeah, you have your attributes that define you when you do your best work, and hopefully you're applying those attributes and shaping your dominant thought.
Yeah, and that dominant thought, that was kind of the big one, actually. You talked to me before we went qualifying, and I think, I mean, it definitely just helps to focus you in. And something you said about you say it much better, but the focus deployment.
Yeah.
Go into that a little bit.
Yeah, that's really the secret to most of these environments. In fact, to every performance environment I've ever worked in, and I've been doing this now for 47 years, and I've had the chance to work with many thousands of high-performance people from all over the world doing many different kinds of things, probably more than 100 professions. And it's the same issue for everybody. And ultimately, in most cases, the problems people create for themselves in the performance world is because they're highly focused on the wrong things. It becomes an incorrect focus problem.
Right.
So if the problem arises because I'm incorrectly focused, then the solution is fairly straightforward. Controlling the deployment of my focus so that I aim it at the right thing at the right time. And if I do that, there's greater chance I'll be successful.
Sure. Now, can you give some examples as to like what people might think about? Like, it's, say you're going into a race weekend, and you know you're going into qualifying. Just that exact scenario. What are the typical things drivers or even athletes, when they have to perform, what do they get focused on?
The most common problem that I've seen, and this is something that's ubiquitous around the world, is an overriding focus on results.
Right.
Because we want it so badly. So we tend to focus on the outcome. We worry about how we're going to do. We think about how fast we are. We focus on our lap time. And the problem is, if we focus on the outcome, we can't be at the same moment in time focused on the process of execution. And ironically, it's our execution that drives the result. And yet, when we focus on the result, we get ourselves into trouble because we're not paying attention to what we're doing at that moment when we're doing it.
Right.
That's the most common thing. Fear of failure is the greatest concern most people have in a performance environment. They're worried about not being good enough and what the consequences of failure might be. And the problem is, when we're focusing on that, we're not focusing on what we're doing. We're focusing on how we're doing.
Sure, sure.
And that's the fundamental problem. It's as simple as that. Simple math.
Fear of failure. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that affects confidence, it increases anxiety, and we never do our best work when we're anxious and we lack confidence.
Yeah.
So it corrupts the mindset that sets that stage to do our best work. So the challenge for most people is to control their mindset in a way that they optimize their performance rather than mentally sabotaging themselves. Because we're all very good at that everywhere.
Sure. Now, how do you keep it from... couple questions in this, but you know, sometimes in race weekends the dominoes start falling, you know, in the wrong direction, and it's hard to get that thing back. You know, it's just a momentum thing, you know. So how
it's a momentum thing because we allow it to become a momentum thing.
Okay.
And once we start thinking about all the things that are going wrong at the same moment in time, we can't be thinking about the right thing, and we end up shooting ourselves in the foot, effectively, because we're actually focused on all the things we're worrying about rather than the process of what it is we're actually supposed to be doing.
Sure.
And we allow that to happen because we don't have to. We could step in and we could control that dominant thought if we chose to. We all have mind chatter going on inside our head.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about our conscious mind is we can actually control it. And the challenge is to take hold and control mind chatter, to change the script, to direct our thoughts to the things that matter in the moment that they do. So the first thing to do is triage those things that seem to be escaping from us that we start worrying about and answer this simple question. Can I control it? If it's not something you can control, what is the benefit to you of worrying about it? Zilch. Nothing. So, if you can't control it, just deal with it. Stop worrying about it. If you can control it, great. Easy to do. Control it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Easy to say, not so easy to do.
Yeah, because we all
want the results so badly, especially when things are going south on us and we're not getting results. And it doesn't matter what it is. We start thinking about the consequences of results.
Yeah, right.
And we worry that it's going to have a tremendous impact on the championship, the season.
How people see you.
How people see us, whether we might lose our sponsors, etc.
All while you're driving around
Absolutely.
At 150 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Those Absolutely. Go through your head.
And that is incorrect focus.
Mm.
You know, I'll simplify it even more in a driving environment. If you just blew a corner, you messed up, and you're thinking about the corner you messed up while you're driving into the next corner, what's more likely to occur? You're going to mess
you're
that one
mess
up too.
Yeah, sure.
How come? Well, simply because your performance is defined by what you're doing in the corner you are in, and yet your thoughts are preoccupied by what you did in the corner you left 20 seconds ago. 10 seconds ago,
so
5 seconds ago.
Driving on a racetrack is a great analogy to just your mind, how it works in general.
Yeah. You need to be present, because the same thing is true. If you're five corners away from your first major professional win and you're thinking about Victory Circle and what all the people you have to remember to thank, what are you not focused on at the same moment?
Turn eight.
And you might throw it off the track because you're going a little too wide, you're going a little too fast, you go in, you break too late, and next thing you know, you're in the weeds, and you've thrown that win away because you were five corners, three turns to the left, up the ramp in Victory Circle.
Right. Yeah, and you look back at that and think of how ridiculous you were to even answering those questions in your mind.
And yet we do it all the time.
Yeah.
So it's about policing our thoughts so that our focus is correct. And that's the Holy Grail. That's the single most important mental skill.
Mm.
And I don't care what sport or occupation we're talking about. The ability to be task-focused and present in the moment to the exclusion of everything else that exists as noise in that moment.
Now, do you find a lot of people that go almost unconsciously where they're not even aware of their thoughts? You know what I mean? Like,
most people are unconscious of their thoughts.
Yeah.
We don't think about how we're thinking. We just think.
We just think.
We just react to our environment. And that's why,
Is that a
honestly,
big challenge? Trying to get people to hone in on that thing?
It's an awareness issue as much as anything else.
Right.
And the fact that we don't police our thoughts, we just react to our environment, explains why people tend to do well and be good when things are going well, and they tend to suck when they're not. Because they allow them their thoughts to be defined by the circumstances in their moment.
Right.
And if the circumstances are negative, they start thinking negatively and they start focusing on the wrong things, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they shoot themselves in the foot and they throw the car off the track.
So self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dig more into that, because I think a lot of people can do that inadvertently.
Yeah. I think the easiest way to kind of understand that self-fulfilling prophecy paradigm is to understand a couple of different things about the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. The conscious mind, we can control. We can directly control. We can choose right now to be focused on the things we're talking about in this interview. Or I could shift my focus here for just a moment and think about what I might have for dinner tonight, right?
Yeah.
It's possible. I could become distracted because I allow myself to think about something else, or I can choose to be fully engaged and focused on what we're doing right now.
Sure.
I can control it. It's one of the features of our conscious mind. I get to control it. Interestingly enough, even though our unconscious mind is much more powerful, and that's where the virtuosity of performance resides, I can't directly control it. I have to influence it. And one of the interesting things about our unconscious mind is that emotions live in our unconscious mind, which means we cannot control our emotions. We cannot directly control our emotions. Because if we could, I could say to you right now, I want you to be sad. Go ahead. We're waiting.
Can't do.
We can fake sadness, right? We can pout or whatever. But to truly feel sorrow, what is the only way you could actually become sad?
Have something sad happen. I don't know.
Well, not even. It's even simpler than that. You could think sad thoughts in your conscious mind, which lead you to become sad.
Right, sure.
Think of your conscious mind like the rudder on a ship. If you position the rudder in a certain way, the boat moves in a certain direction. If you consciously control your thoughts to be in one way, your unconscious mind will lead you to sabotage yourself or not, depending on the nature of those conscious thoughts. So what we're really doing is we're trying to figure out, how do we control the rudder? How do we position the rudder in our conscious mind, the thoughts that we choose to think, in a way that optimizes our performance rather than sabotaging it?
Right.
Because if we don't purposefully and deliberately control them, we'll ebb and flow with the good things and bad things that happen in our environment. And when we start thinking in a bad way, the consequences are usually bad.
Yeah, and so you just follow life's pattern.
Yeah, you go with the flow, right?
Yeah.
And that's not what champions do, because champions control their internal environment to have the same balanced, confident, optimistic, task-focused thought process regardless of the feces hitting the fan, especially when it's hitting the fan.
Yeah.
And those are where the real champions are. So those are the guys and gals who pull the rabbit out of the hat and they create a good performance in a really lousy situation. And that's how you create championships, because championships are more influenced by how well you do on the days when things aren't going well than how you do in the days when things are going great, because right. Anybody could do that.
Sure.
So it's simple enough. It's about understanding how to control the rudder to engage our unconscious mind to optimize our performance. And that's what the ACT model process is.
Yeah.
It's a methodology of self-critique and self-correction that's designed to shape our conscious mind's dominant thought. Because if we do, we position the rudder in a certain way and our unconscious mind acts on that and dips in and allows us to do what we're capable of doing.
Can you talk about the pendulum thing a little? I mean, we don't have a video feed. We normally do have video, but it can't travel with it.
Yeah.
I mean, are you able to talk about it a little bit?
Well, it's really so cool. A physical expression of this conscious mind, unconscious mind relationship. And the idea behind the pendulum exercise is that without willfully or deliberately thinking about moving a pendulum, without deliberately doing it, if I simply think about it moving, it actually moves. And it operates a lot like a dimmer switch does on a light circuit. When we consciously think of something, it's like the full force of the current going to the light. It's a nice bright light. When we actually deliberately and consciously try to do something, it's like the light is full on. When we imagine it, it's like turning the dimmer switch to the left. It reduces the intensity, but it follows the same wires. And in fact, the same motor pathways are activated. The same patterned responses are activated in the motor units that cause the arm to move and the pendulum to move in a certain way. We do it without even consciously being aware of it. Our unconscious mind takes over.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, it's much more powerful when you experience it and when you see it.
Yeah.
It's even more powerful when you experience it than when you see it, because you tend to think the person's doing it on purpose, and in fact, they're not.
Right. I know. That's the thing. I was showing someone. They're like, oh, you're like, I'm like, honestly, look at my arm. Like, look at my hand.
In fact, if you tried to do it that subtly, it would be hard to actually control that consciously.
It'd be erratic, too.
Yeah. The unconscious mind simply salutes and says, aye, aye, captain, and away it goes.
Yeah.
The muscles are activated in exactly the same sequence, and they're integrated and controlled, so the pendulum moves, and you're not even deliberately doing it. It's happening unconsciously.
Right. And I think the point it proves, too, is that there's so much we're not aware of that goes on when you have your dominant thought going. Unconsciously, like the whatever nerve endings are going, they're manipulating everything around you in
that's
a way
the,
that you
that's
can't
the basis
really understand.
Of mental rehearsal. That's the basis of mental practice.
Yeah.
If you practice something mentally, you're actually engaging the motor pathways that you will use in the execution of that task, but you're doing it at an unconscious level. And you're actually tapping into those same networks and that same neural link pathway.
Sure.
And you don't even realize you're doing it. So mental rehearsal is powerful because it's seat time for a driver in his mind.
Which is very valuable.
Which
when
is absolutely valuable.
Costs a fortune.
Well, think of what a lap costs around Sebring,
around
Daytona. It's there. The people who calculate these things can put a dollar value to every single lap.
$632
that lap. Whatever it is, because you got to rebuild the engine at a certain mileage and all the consumables, the tires. There's a calculus that goes into figuring out what every lap worth is costing you as a driver. So imagine if you could get multiple laps that cost you nothing other than the mental energy to practice, to mentally rehearse. And when you realize that you're actually activating the motor pathways in the same way, you start to realize that that's a bargain. It's a real big bargain, in fact.
Right, right.
And people don't realize it, but that's also where the whole issue of stress comes into it. Because anxiety is what cripples a lot of people's ability to bring their best performance, and yet...
Like performance anxiety?
Absolutely, performance anxiety. Anxiety usually associated with a fear of failing, a fear of what the consequences of failure might be. In some cases, it's a fear of getting hurt. It's a fear, ultimately, of not being successful when we desire success so deeply.
Now, would you suggest to someone not desire success so greatly as your dominant thought? I mean, because we've talked about that your dominant thought ideally would be one, like presence of mind, you're focused on the process.
No, I don't have a problem with that, the desire side. In fact, I think it's really important. It's a timing.
Ambition.
It's a timing issue. When you're not in the race car, recognize what your goals are. Be motivated by those goals. Desire success, because that's what fuels the sweat equity necessary to do the hard work of training, watching your nutrition, studying film, working on the simulator, and all the other things that you do to get yourself ready to maximize the car, whatever they give you.
Right.
So that's a good thing, because it's what fuels the hard work and the effort.
Every day,
Every day. That desire to be successful, the desire to win. Nothing wrong with that.
But can it get too
absolutely.
Inflamed?
Where it becomes problematic is if you lose balance in your life because you become a unidimensional robot.
Yeah.
And from a performance point of view, it really becomes the problem when you're in the moment of performance. Because if your focus is on success and results while you're performing, it can't be on the execution of the process that actually drives you to that result.
Sure.
It's, you know, the desire to be fast and constantly focusing on your lap time that shows up on your dash, on your electronic dash, is the surest way to be slow. Because the more the more time you spend staring at your time and thinking about what that time represents, because of rule number two, you don't end up thinking about what you're doing in that moment, and you don't hit your marks as cleanly.
Yeah.
So it becomes a timing issue. Nothing wrong with desiring success and wanting to be successful. But when you get in the car, forget about success.
Doesn't matter.
Focus on execution. Because success will either be there or it won't, based on what will be at the end of the next 40 minutes or 50 minutes or 60 minutes or 12 hours, right?
Yeah.
Because we don't know what that's going to bring. We won't know until we get there.
Mm.
And the problem is I can't control winning and losing. So if I'm focused on winning and losing or how fast I am, I sacrifice it because I'm not focusing fully on what I'm doing, and that's what gets the result.
Right, and a lot. I think
it's
a lot of
straightforward. It's that simple, and yet we violate it all the time.
All the time.
Yeah,
and yeah, I think a lot of people in karting too. Like this was something that it came up in my career in karting, and I know a lot of other people. You fixate on the lap timer, and you almost will that thing to drop in time, and you overdrive, and the time goes up, and you're getting worse. Which makes you more frustrated, and you're dominant.
And then you try harder.
Yep.
You try harder, and you overdrive more.
Yeah.
And then you keep staring more and more at your time. I think of it a little bit like the way a sonar in a submarine works.
Yeah.
We send out a ping with sonar, and that ping bounces off our target and comes back to us, and we read the signal that comes back. And experienced people can tell you exactly what it is. It's a whale, it's a submarine, it's an outcropping of rock under the ocean
right.
floor or whatever. We do that all the time. And what we ping is how we're doing. And while we're doing it, we ping how we're doing. And if we're doing
so
in a way that's consistent with our expectations and what we're looking for, we relax and we keep doing what we're doing. Because things are going our way. And then we tend to focus more on what we're doing, and we continue potentially to do well. But the problem arises when we ping, and what comes back to us says, you're not doing nearly as well as you thought you would, or you're nowhere near where you need to be. Now, all of a sudden, what do?
You scramble.
We start pinging more often, too, because we want to check in to see if it's getting better or not. So we ping more often. We keep focusing on the result. We keep looking at our lap time to see if it's coming down, and the damn thing is going up instead. So what do? We overdrive. We overreach because we try and force it to happen. In a race car, that usually ends up not being productive.
And you're not like in touch with the car.
No.
Because there's a big element to racing of just
feel.
You're feeling that thing everywhere.
Yeah.
Everything is about feel. And if you lose touch, I find that to be the biggest difference is like you all of a sudden have lost your connection with the car, your communication. There's something in the way now, and you two are no longer communicating.
You're not listening to what the car's telling you because you're focused on something else. It's that same problem.
And the knocking gets softer.
Yeah, fundamentally, it's the same incorrect focus.
Yeah.
The more I worry about how fast I am, the less fast I go. The more I focus on just hitting my marks as perfectly as I can, as vigorously as the car will allow, the faster I tend to go.
Simple as.
It's as simple as that.
And
that's the simplicity of it. And it's not just that in racing. It's that in surgery. It's that in special forces warfare. It's that in shooting. It's that in everything.
Right. Now, and the other thing I noticed too is like I come from a background of football. I played football up into college, played a little bit of college ball. And football is so quick of a sport that you almost don't have time to think. Sometimes you can check in, like when, say, I played on offense, I was a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the defense would go out, that's when you do that sonar thing, you know?
Yeah.
But when you're playing, it's every play is like bang, bang.
Yeah.
And any moment in a play is unconscious.
Well, that's true for the guys who play well. For the guys who don't,
They're overthinking it, yeah.
So ultimately, the more you do that, that you just focus on what you're doing. And you say it's the nature of the sport that drives that focus. Well, actually, that's not entirely true.
Right.
Because there are people who play that position who aren't that effective because they're not correctly focused.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, it depends how good a player you are. The better you are as a player, the more likely you are to be fully focused on the execution of what you're doing. Running the pattern, turning at precisely the right time, cradling the ball in exactly the right way, or whatever the situation is in that moment.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the comparison I find between racing is that racing, you get out there alone with the car and you got a lot of time with yourself to think.
Potentially, yes.
Potentially.
Yeah.
And drive.
Yeah, it's not so much when you're battling in close quarters with someone, but when you are there's a gap behind you and there's a gap ahead of you, and now it's competition actually against the track, not against another car. That's when it's usually harder, because that's when we have more time to think.
That's actually a good way of almost hacking that, though.
Exactly.
Making it a competition between you and the track. Because now that you have an opponent right there, right? Like, that's because normally I when I'm racing someone, I am so in the moment, like that I'm there.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you get in a little gap, you can check in, you do the sonar thing.
Yeah, and your mind drifts to other things, and before you know it, you're thinking about lunch.
Yeah.
And then you wake up and you say, "Oh, wrong thought right now," at 160 miles an hour.
Braking zone.
Yeah, break now.
Break now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's about policing that, though, because that's really what we're talking about. The ability to police, to control your focus of attention, to be on the right thing at the right time, that is the Holy Grail, single most important thing.
Yeah.
And it is that simple, and yet it's violated all over the world in every profession I've ever encountered.
Do you have something? Do people need like a pendant or something? Or I don't know, something to remind them? Because I think a lot of people will just go down. Even if they hear this, you know, a week from now, they'll go down the street unconsciously, you know, and they'll do their activities unconsciously. They'll do their workout unconsciously.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll do the sonar thing and check in.
It's an awareness issue. It's something where once I become aware of how it works, now I have tools and I have a process that I can apply to avoid the trap. And I think, you know, the rules of the mental road that I talk about. Rule number two is a really important one. It's the foundation, I think, of the whole thing. And it says the conscious mind can only actively process one thought at a time.
Hmm.
Here's the significance of that rule from a performance point of view. And I don't care what the performance is. If that rule is in fact true, and maybe we'll test it here in just a moment to see that whether it is or not, it has a monumental impact on performance. And here's what that rule really says. If I'm focused on the wrong thing at the same moment in time, I cannot be focused on the right thing. And that affects my performance. However, the solution to that problem is equally simple. If I'm focused on the right thing, I'll never be focused on the wrong thing at the same moment in time.
Boom.
Right? So all I need to do is expend a little effort controlling the deployment of my focus so that it ends up being on the right thing at the right time. Now, some people will try to argue that we can actually think of a bunch of different things at the same time. I worked with some air traffic controllers a number of years ago, and they said that's not true. We're taught in the Air Traffic Control Academy that our job is all about focusing on a bunch of different things at the same time. Think about what an air traffic controller does. And I simply responded by saying, okay, let's test it and see if that's true. So here's what I want the audience to do. You and I are going to do it together. I want everybody who's listening to do it as well. When I tell you to start, I want you to start at 100 and count out loud backwards by threes. We're going to start at 100. We're going to count backwards by threes out loud. And while you're doing that, I'm going to give you a simple mathematical problem I want you to solve and give me the answer to at the same time. So here we go. 100.
97. 94, 91,
2 times 3 equals
85,
2 times
6,
3 equals
82.
Okay. So let's step back from that simple cognitive exercise and examine what happened. Because here's actually what happens for every single person out there who actually tried this little exercise. Because there isn't a single human being on the planet who can actually process both tasks at the same time. What happens is, our mind is engaged and we start counting backwards. Until I ask the question, and I had to ask it twice to break into your script, right? Once we process that I've asked you something, the processing of the first task stops, your internal focus of attention shifts, you dip into auditory memory to answer the question, what did he say? Oh, 2 times 3, that's 6. Your internal focus of attention should have shifted back. You would have dipped into short-term memory to remember where you were, and you would have re-engaged the task of counting backwards by 3s.
Yeah.
Isn't that correct?
That's exactly
Now, you crashed and burned on the re-entry, but the point was, you couldn't actively process both tasks, as simple as they are, at the same time.
Right.
Rule number 2 is, in fact, true. The conscious mind can only actively process one thought at a time. What we do is we shift our focus of attention from one thing to another thing and back again, but it requires a shift in focus. And therein lies the problem, right? Because if I'm focused on the wrong thing, I can't be focused on the right one at the same moment in time. On the flip side, if I'm focused on the right thing, I'll never be focused on the wrong thing at the same moment in time. So it's a deployment issue.
Sure.
And a lot of people say, okay, so if I understand you correctly, the solution is I just have to focus more, right? How often do we hear that? Just focus more. If you just focused more, you'd do better.
Yeah, all the time.
Incorrect. And here's how I would respond to that. If the thing you're focused on is the wrong thing at that moment, how does focusing more help? It doesn't, does it? It actually makes the problem worse.
Yeah, because now you're just focusing on that dominant thought, fear
of
failure.
The wrong thing. Even more.
You're like
so
everything.
The solution isn't to focus more. The solution is actually to focus correctly. Mm. And that's where people fall on their face. Because they don't realize this. And the skill of concentration is a complex interaction. It's not a simple phenomenon of one flat skill.
Right.
And we don't really have time to get into that. But It's an issue. People misunderstand what concentration is, what focus is, and they think that they're lousy at focusing, when in fact the truth is they're probably pretty good at focusing. They're just lousy at controlling its deployment. And that's two different things. Once we understand the concept of controlling the deployment of our focus, surprisingly, we start to learn to focus more effectively.
Yeah.
Because we pay attention to where we're aiming our focus of attention.
Yeah, and it feels like you have like, oh no, I do have focus. Like I have that. It's not like today I'm not focused.
That's right.
It's just I've deployed all my focus over
on
in this
on the wrong things. Yeah,
knoll of you know, eating
somewhere else, wherever that is. If it's the wrong thing at the wrong time, that's how you shoot yourself in the foot and you make mistakes.
Yeah.
And when you make those mistakes in a race car at speed, it becomes a costly mistake in many instances.
Consequences, yeah.
Yeah, the consequences are a lot worse than having to bend down and pick up the tennis ball because you dropped the tennis ball, or for that matter, bend down to pick up the football because you didn't catch it correctly.
Right. Now, just real quick, the visualization thing that we talked about a little bit, because that was something I really dove into last year, and I'm still doing it. But can you go into a little bit, like how, what's the process of visualizing? Do you
I like a different word than visualization. I like imagery.
Imagery, okay.
Because imagery implies the use of all of the senses, where visualization tends to be about what we see in our mind's eye.
Yeah.
Imagery is about what we see, what we hear, what we feel, the sensations and the feelings that are part of it, not just the movie that plays on the movie screen in our mind's eye.
Gotcha.
It's the feeling about it. So the more we pull in the other senses into our imagery, to feel what the transition feels like when we get into that corner and when the car responds correctly and then hooks up, what that feels like, the more we pull those other senses into our mental rehearsal or our thought process, the more we actually engage the unconscious mind to take us to that position.
Right.
Simple math.
Now, do you have people like go into a driving position, or can you literally just sit down and run it through your head
Absolutely.
With all the emotions and everything?
Absolutely. You don't have to be in the cockpit. You don't have to be in that position. You can do it just by imagining. That's what mental rehearsal of, mental laps are.
Right, right.
Do a mental lap of Sebring later on, now that you've been around it quite a few times, with a stopwatch in your hand, and try and do it in real time, and then compare your stopwatch time against your real time, and it'll give you an understanding of how good your imagery is.
Yeah.
And usually what happens is people drive the mental lap much faster in their mind than they do in reality. And what happens is you end up missing a lot of the information.
Oh. Right. Now, what about, okay, so if I did, especially when I'm in a race weekend, it's a lot easier for me to do the imagery thing because it's so fresh, like in my in my body, in my mind, of all the sensations that you get. When I step out of the race car and I'm out of it for like a month or something, it's much harder to simulate those feelings. How do you go into that?
Well, it's like anything else. Practice makes you better at it. Practice makes permanent. So it's one of the ways in which a lot of people use simulators and video-like games that mimic driving a race car. If all you do is you use it like a visualization, you miss out on the value of those simulations. If you can not just see it in your mind's eye, but sense the feeling of the car and how it moves as it moves through different corners and different positions on the track, if you remind yourself of those other feelings, it's going to be a lot easier to lock that into your visual memory.
Sure.
Because it becomes a sensory memory, not just a visual one.
Mm.
It's not a two-dimensional thing. It's a three-dimensional thing because you inject the feeling part.
Oof. It's good.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you know what it's like? Just when you blip the throttle and you downshift in a particular corner and what it sounds like when it's exactly right, when you do it exactly on point versus when you don't. That's why imagery is an interesting way to think about it, because you pull those sounds into your experience. And the more you can experience it in real time with all of the emotions and the feelings and everything else, the more powerful that mental rehearsal becomes.
Yeah. That's awesome. Jock, thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Food for
Appreciate
thought.
It.
That's what it is, right?
Yeah. Do you have anything more you want to add on to this? That was awesome. I'm excited about it. I want to re-listen to this because there's so many gems.
You know, it's a sort of thing that sometimes it's a little hard to wrap our head around. If people are interested, they can go to my website and check out some books there. And the books cover some of this material in a way that maybe they can get some insight that they can use in their performance.
Sure. Awesome. Yeah, and you were talking about there's some stuff in the future and the pipeline that's coming around.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff. But for the moment, they can go to performanceprime.com and check out what's there. And it's an inexpensive way to get a look at the mental side of the game.
Yeah. I would highly suggest any of the listeners, if you're into sport, business, any type of thing that you have to perform or be your best, get Jock's book. It's awesome.
I think the key too is this. For all of us, we want to be successful. I've never met a single person, and I've been doing this for, like I said, this I think my 47th year. Not once, not a single time has anybody ever come up to me and said, I want to be a loser. I'd like to fail. I'm really hoping I come in last this weekend. I really would like to suck at this. Can you show me how to suck at this? No one's ever asked that. Everybody wants to be successful, but we don't always know how.
Right.
And I think the key is we don't understand what we don't understand until it becomes clear to us. So the more we invest in understanding how we think, the more likely we are to control, to be able to learn to control the way we think, and that has a huge impact on performance, has a huge impact on safety, and it has a huge impact on stress. And ultimately, the goal is to perform at a consistently higher level with less stress in our life. Nothing wrong with that
picture. That's a good model.
Nothing wrong with that picture. So that's a trainable, what I just described is a trainable skill. Once you understand how.
Wow.
That's it. Simple math.
I dig it. Awesome. Thank you, Jacques. And thanks for tuning in. Cafe Machina, episode number 12. Thank you.